I'm the first speaker, and let me introduce myself. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Nils Svensson. I'm an agricultural engineer at the Engineering Research and Development Center in Champaign. Thanks, Bruce. At the Construction Engineering Research Lab. And today I'm going to be talking about a methodology for LID site selection integration with existing stormwater management plans on military lands. Whew. So, very quickly, an overview is we're going to briefly talk about what LID is, what that means to the Army, study site at Fort Hood, the challenges to successful low-impact development integration, and how are we going to make the best LID selections with existing stormwater management infrastructure. Low-impact development, or LID, the techniques are site-specific strategies that work with biological and physical systems of a site, and they help achieve water and conservation goals. It's an ecosystem-based, watershed-based approach site design and development that's integrated. And low-impact development tools emphasize source controls and are decentralized often in application. The main idea is kind of just to work with the natural system to achieve environmental improvement. Now, there's been some work that's done that deals a lot with non-contaminant areas, but what I'm going to be talking about today specifically applies to the contaminant area. Some low-impact development techniques and technologies. You got bioretention, rain gardens, bioswales, compost amendments, downspout, disconnection, rain barrels, filter mats, grassy swales, permeable pavements, revegetation, buffer zones, selective grading, site fingerprinting, vegetated swales. The main thing is that whatever technology you choose, make sure that you have designed specifically to your site and your site's needs and your infrastructure needs. And what is relevant to your location. Your practices and materials that you might select might depend on your environment as well. Why does the Army care? Well, energy and water are national priority and national security issues. The Army Strategy for Environment, the Energy Policy Act, Executive Order 13423, Energy Independence Security Act, Army Regulation 210 with the 2010 update, and the Executive Order 13514, which is probably the biggest issue right now. And that deals with any development that goes on an installation that's over 5,000 square feet needs to have an assessment and take it back to the pre-development hydrology. Basically, that means that you're going to have to do low-impact development for that site. And considering the amount of infrastructure development and rehabbing that's going on a lot of military installations, this does present some issues for military planners. So to break it down, when you're doing a site assessment, you go in and you're basically trying to provide a solution at the lowest cost in the best location, and you're trying to optimize all this. You got to strike a balance. So you want to look at the implementation level. You're looking at scale, whether it's a regional, site-specific scale. Your green infrastructure focus here is the conservation, whether you're doing land rehab, whether you're dealing with compliance issues, you're dealing with TMDL, pollution reduction, water control, or if your focus is a combination of all these issues here. You also have to consider your ecological linkages, your habitat, what you're affecting upstream or downstream. Threatened and endangered species are always a concern on military installations. And then, of course, your land use and the environment that you're surrounded in, whether your cantonment or training area, or you're kind of on the cusp of that. The uplands, whether you're in a lowland, whether you might have restrictions to the practices that you might try to implement. And eventually, once that gets done, you try to develop a stormwater management design. You follow the installation design guidelines or the installation management plan. And then you evaluate the area network connections to the stormwater design. And once that's completed, then you can go ahead and look at your land use requirements, what your current land use requirements are, and what your future requirements might be. And then you can get into doing your pre-development hydrological assessment. And once that's finished, then you can have an idea of what kind of design that you might have. And this is the process where you start going through your design iteration, your review, you submit it to the review committee, and they send it back at you probably several times at the very least. And hopefully, if you run this circle a few times, you can get the path to consensus. You'll have a design that you can work with. Basically, I'm just going to look here quickly at Fort Hood, some stuff that's going on there. Fort Hood, the great place. The stormwater management plan that they put in place in 2008 basically tries to integrate their LEED program and their LID program. They didn't specifically come out and give a lot of guidelines for their low-impact development program. They're kind of still working on that. And that's where I'm trying to give them some assistance, basically trying to help them choose which practices might be suitable in what locations. Now, there are some challenges to that. One is, of course, they're rapidly expanding and rebuilding Fort Hood, a lot of new development going in. There's a lack of information available, especially considering their stormwater drainage network, at least in digital format. When it comes to site-specific solutions, they have a lot of information there, but it's really only relevant to the task at hand and not the infrastructure as a whole. And they don't really have a good grasp of what LID technologies are best in various settings, and they've had bad experiences with low-impact development technologies in the past. So the stormwater watershed requirements, understanding and formulating the correct questions regarding LID implementation, and of course they're always interested in what the cost would be, what the return on investment would be, and how do you compare the different technologies to each other. Let's see how I'm doing on time. Pretty good. Stormwater management systems at Fort Hood for low impact development retrofitting, doing some stuff there. Looking at, unfortunately they have a poor LID track record. They've had some issues with permeable pavements and things like that, blowouts and poorly designed structures where that just don't work or clog up. So what they're looking for right now is some well-done, well-constructed, high-visibility, low-impact designs. This is through their engineering DPW environmental group. They want team collaboration, and we need to work on their data integrity and their design flexibility. I'm working with their GIS group basically to help coordinate some of the development that they're doing with their stormwater management system and making sure that we can use that information once it's completely available. They're about 3/4 of the way done with it currently. And then concentrate on long-term sustainability and the future considerations when you make a design. Is this extensible to other developments that might occur in the area? Potential planning tool, what's currently available right now, is the stormwater management modeling, which is SWIM. It's a dynamic rainfall routing model. It's good for single event and continuous simulation of runoff quantity and quality. But this particular package has been kind of wrapped up in this new GIS-based system, the decision tool. Basically, it does cost optimization, LID placement, according to various parameters that you input into the model. And you can do low-impact development management plans based on cost and effectiveness at pretty much any scale that you want to do. Sustain incorporates elements of SWIM, HSPF, and other BMP modeling techniques like BSF-MOD. For many installations, detailed GIS information on drainage networks, BMP placement, are in development or do not exist. And this is the big hang-up so far with using Sustain, since it is data intensive. The required inputs for it are currently being created. So stay tuned. See what happens with this. The Fort Hood projects that we're currently working on, are permeable pavement parking with native vegetation. Looking to see if we can get some success in that area, because they've had issues with permeable pavements in the past. We're trying to develop a low-maintenance, long-term solution. Then bioswales, we're concentrating on overcoming the infiltration issues with the caliche soils that they have at Fort Hood. So, lessons learned, how do we retrofit low-impact development and other stormwater design techniques to improve drainage networks and watersheds? Follow the IMP and the IDG, so the installation's happy. Utilize the best tools and information available at your disposal, and just make sure that you're open and flexible, that your design is probably not going to be what you originally intended, and it's probably going to move to a different location. Proper implementation and maintenance training are probably the most crucial elements. You can design the best thing in the world. Chances are they're not going to maintain it, so it better be maintenance-free. And that's all I have for that particular talk. Are there any questions? I think I've finished. Hal, what?
Well, not a question so much as a comment. Talking about the installation design guide, we ran into some of them that had specifications like all parking lots will be fully curbed. And they're saying, well, and they just absolutely refused to modify that even slightly at least one location.
Right, and that is true. I mean, the installation design guidelines are somewhat rigid, and I've run into situations with that with the parking lot developed myself about certain things that they want on the parking lot. I don't know. Fortunately, some of these are demonstrations, so you can often convince them to bend the rules a bit, at least in this case, but on a larger scale, those are issues where we're going to have to prove to them that, you know, different solutions actually do work and change. We need to change some of those rules.
We can convince them in at least one case to at least allow some curb cuts.
Yes.
But the visual people, you know, people who look at it as a visual thing rather than a functional one, just don't like the appearance of the indistinct edges that just run off into nothing. They want it nicely bordered with a curb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes. I mean, unfortunately, there is that mindset there, and how do we overcome that? It's people by people, I guess, you know, person by person. So, yes?
You had a list of known options.
Yes.
What, can you explain a little more about site fingerprinting?
Site fingerprinting, basically, where is this here, is basically making sure that that particular site it's often a combination of factors. You have like selective grading. It's very similar to that.
Okay, so it's kind of similar to what you described in your project there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Smaller. It's basically following the contours of the landscape to reduce and slow water. So, it's not much different than there's other practices, one microterracing, things like that.
I would call it micro contours.
Right.
So that.
And it looks like a fingerprint. That's why they say, yeah.
You aren't treating a big whole area as one thing. Mm-hmm. You're recognizing that it's moving in different directions in different parts of it.
Tony.
Do you ever look at existing, you know, maybe poor quality runoff sites and then improving them to avoid putting in other, you know, newer sites? Like existing sites, they might have a pond there or something, and improve it, dredge it?
Yes. And of course, that is always an option when they're redeveloping a site. The intention is that they're supposed to go back and reevaluate and see if the original practice there, and that's when they're doing the pre-assessment hydrology, they need to consider the fact that the practice that might currently be there might not be what's actually best for a particular location. So that's kind of on a case-by-case basis, but yes, that does need to be considered.